Hello and welcome to Fine Print, the double scrutiny, the story and its coverage with me, Amir Arfa. But first, as always, a quick check of the big print. The big print goes. UN nuclear agency team arrives in Tehran. Iran IAEA in new talks to clear nuclear doubts. U.S. military chief in Israel discusses Iran. U.S. Army chief meets Israeli officials to discuss Iran report. Israel faces hard sell in convincing U.S. on Iran. On Iran, U.S. stumbles and Europe grumbles. Gulf challenges U.S. on Iran, Israel. And how a special search for Iran's nuclear arms program turned up nothing. Help us track the fine print. We're joined all the way live from London by Mohan Abedin, Director of Research at the Center for the Study of Terrorism, an expert on Iranian politics, from Washington by Jeff Steinberg, Senior Editor of Executive Intelligence Review magazine, the EIR. We're also joined from New York by Stuart Stogel, UN correspondent for Time magazine. But straight to our first pick tonight, of course, a lot of developments all around Iran's nuclear issue, and especially after the NIE, the U.S. National Intelligence estimate on Iran's nuclear program. But now straight to our first pick tonight, an article from Spiegel Online titled Intelligence Agencies Put Brakes on Bush's Iran Plans. It starts a high-level report that Iran suspended its nuclear weapons program in 2003, marked a sensational reversal for the U.S. intelligence community. Conservatives like John Bolton are calling it politics disguised as intelligence, but the report also raises the question of whether Bush lied to Americans. Here's a picture of Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and a quote from him, "This is a declaration of victory." Further down, the article goes on, "They did their utmost to make the situation appear as dramatic as possible so that they could rattle their sabers and issue one threat after another. Only recently, U.S. President George W. Bush said that Iran's aggressive pursuit of a military nuclear program raised the specter of a World War III. Vice President Dick Cheney said that the West must use all means necessary to deter Tehran from its U.S. And here is what we have a left out here. U.S. launches military strikes against Iran's nuclear facilities. The better said Norman Podhoretz, foreign policy advisor to Rudy Giuliani, the front runner for the Republican presidential nomination. John Bolton, U.S. ambassador to the United Nations until 2006, called any attempts to qualify the threat of a nuclear holocaust triggered by Tehran an irresponsible policy of appeasement, unquote. Indeed, if Bolton had his way, UN Chief Weapons Inspector and Nobel Peace Prize winner Mohammad al-Baradei would have been fired immediately for supposedly being too soft on Iran. Bolton even called al-Baradei an apologist for the mullah regime. Stuart Stogel, I'd like to have your take on the Spiegel and, of course, earlier on, the report itself.
Well, I think a lot of people are going to criticize the Americans for this NIE. There's a lot of debate inside the United States as to how exactly accurate this NIE really was. It's going to be a source of debate inside the United States for a long time to come. But I think of more importance for Iran, the administration has made it clear they're still going to try and pursue sanctions in the Security Council, because according to President Bush, the issue before the UN is the enrichment of uranium, not the secret weapons program. So as long as Iran continues to enrich uranium, Washington still thinks it has substantial grounds to move against Iran in the Security Council.
All right, let's go to Jeff Steinberg joining us from Washington. Jeff, I know you have articles, not just one, on this issue. Let's have your take on Der Spiegel and, of course, your own points.
Well, my view is that the whole intent of the release of the National Intelligence Estimate was to put a very significant damper on the war party that still represents a significant faction inside the Bush administration, led by the vice president. I think the intelligence community, the CIA, the Pentagon, other agencies, the State Department, wanted to deliver an extremely strong message to pull the legs out from under the White House war faction. And my understanding from sources in and around the White House is that top administration officials were told in no uncertain terms that if they continued to attempt to suppress the report, that it would be leaked to the media and would cause an embarrassment to this administration more devastating than the Pentagon Papers of the 1970s were to Richard Nixon. In an interview a day or so after the release of the public findings, the summary of the NIE, Vice President Dick Cheney told an online Capitol Hill publication that the White House decided to release the report in part because it, quote, would have come out anyway. And when he was asked point blank if he was concerned that the report would have been leaked, he said, quote, unquote, everything leaks. So since the release of the report, there have also been a series of news reports, Washington Post, New York Times, Los Angeles Times, providing a rather detailed inside look into the specific intelligence that was obtained by U.S. intelligence agencies, a project called Operation Brain Drain that was oriented towards recruiting informants among Iranian scientists. And so we've been given a very clear window as to what the intelligence community found, what they don't know still at this point. But I think the most fundamental thing is that there was a resounding vote among U.S. intelligence not to repeat the false intelligence leading to an unjustified war that we saw in Iraq in 2003. And so this was a shot across the bow at the White House, and I think that's most important. This is why people like John Bolton and Norman Podhoretz have publicly gone berserk and accused the CIA and the other intelligence agencies of waging factional war against the White House. I think in a certain sense that's accurate, and they're upset about the fact that they're going to have a much harder time selling the idea of bombing Iran before this administration leaves office.
All right. Now, you covered a lot of grounds. We've got to keep up with that. But let's go back to Der Spiegel and one line which says it all. It says, but now all of that has changed, all the tough rhetoric from Washington and the neocons. Now let's go to the report itself. Let's take a look here. National Intelligence Estimate, Iran and Nuclear Intentions and Capabilities. This is, of course, the declassified version, just a few pages as opposed to the 140 pages of the report, the original version itself, declassified. And now we have the scope note. It says, this National Intelligence Estimate, the NIE, assesses the status of Iran's nuclear program, the program's outlook over the next 10 years. This time frame is more appropriate for estimating capabilities than intentions and foreign reactions, which are more difficult to estimate over a decade. And further down, we have certain language of the report that very unlikely, even chance. It talks about its own language, and also certain litany that runs through the report, like factors like high confidence, moderate confidence, and low confidence, certain word plays that are very important in this report. And then here is the section that says key judgments. A, we judge with high confidence that in fall 2003, Tehran halted its nuclear weapons program. We also assess with moderate to high confidence that Tehran, at a minimum, is keeping open the option to develop nuclear weapons, Mohan Abedin. Your assessment of this report as a whole?
The National Intelligence Estimate Report.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I think I agree somewhat with your previous guests, your guests in the United States, that this in many ways is a significant break on the aspirations and machinations of the war party in the United States. It clearly has a very strong political message, and it's had a very significant effect on the rhetoric of the people pushing for a much more robust confrontation between the United States and Iran. But leaving aside its political parameters and just focusing on its intelligence function, there are a huge number of questions are prompted by this report. First and foremost, this timeline of 2003 and how that was arrived at. And the very fact that this report fundamentally contradicts, in that sense, a report in 2005 that insisted that Iran was still trying to produce a nuclear weapon. I don't think this report quite explains the contradiction in as clear a manner as possible. The second set of important questions revolve around the sourcing for this report. The report, for obvious reasons, does not go into that, because that would run contrary to the very nature of intelligence work, which is covert and secret, and much of it revolves around source protection and the protection of methods. But there's been a lot of information leaked to the media over the past week as to the essential sources for this report, and it seems that signals intelligence played a key part. In other words, U.S. intelligence agencies and American military installations in the Persian Gulf and beyond were keeping a very close, very watchful eye, on the communications between Iranian military commanders and the Iranian military political infrastructure more broadly. Of course, signals intelligence is important, but it has its limitations. But one obvious thing that springs to mind is that if Iran did have a nuclear weapons program, and that's a big if, and I personally do not believe that it's ever had a very full-on weapons program, but if it did, surely the circle of knowledge would be limited to very few people. It's highly unlikely that the Iranians would broaden the circle of knowledge to top military commanders, and moreover, it's unlikelier still that these commanders would be talking about it over either unsecure or not totally secure communication channels. So as far as the intelligence sourcing of this report is concerned, there's a lot of questions. And clearly the intelligence community and their political masters are very reluctant to answer those questions. But I suppose, talking about it from a political point of view, this date 2003 is highly important.
Right.
How it's arrived at,
right. On that
how
very
credible
note,
it is.
Right. On that very note of 2003, let's go to Stuart Stogel. Stuart, just a couple of days back, I had this interview, exclusive interview here on A Fine Print with Ali Larijani, former top Iranian nuclear negotiator. And he called the report at points mischievous. Well, he said, well, of course, this goes back, reneges on former statements out of White House and elsewhere in Washington that Iran is pursuing a nuclear weapons program. Of course, belies another NIE back in 2005 that Iran was pursuing nuclear weapons program. But on the other hand, well, he had issues with the 2003 date and so many other points inside the report. So he did not characterize the report in its entirety as a victory for the Islamic Republic. He had his own problems. Now, we have different sides reading different interpretations into this report. But basically, one thing is clear, if you will, and that is the U.S., this NIE belies the previous one and, of course, all assertions coming out of Washington that Iran is actively pursuing a nuclear weapons program. Your take.
Well, I think that there's a lot of, shall we say, confusion, even within the intelligence community, So I think they wanted to pursue a very conservative course, and because they could not find a quote-unquote smoking gun that would show conclusively that Iran was pursuing a weapons program, they decided to err on the side of conservatism and basically come out saying there was no conclusive proof that a weapons program is currently underway. Now, one other thing, and I believe that the United States, again, is not going to ease up the pressure on Iran because the administration has publicly said the current issue is the enrichment of the uranium. And I think the administration is going to try and make that front and center and try and downplay the conclusions of the NIE, and will still pursue actions against Iran in the Security Council. I don't think that is going to change, and I think the Americans might be successful in putting pressure on both the Chinese and the Russians to get sanctions approved. I think what you will see is the kind of sanctions will be much less and not quite as biting as they might have been had the NIE not surfaced publicly last week.
Speaking of sanctions, here is exactly what Russians have to say right after this NIE. U.S. report, a factor in Iran sanctions debate, Russia. And this is, of course, after a meeting between Condoleezza Rice, U.S. Secretary of State, and her Russian counterpart at a NATO summit. It says a U.S. intelligence, this is by Reuters, by the way, it says a U.S. intelligence report saying Tehran does not have an active nuclear weapons program will be a factor in deciding whether new sanctions on Iran are needed, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said on Wednesday, and here's a direct quote from him. We will assess the situation and proposals for a new resolution in the United Nations Security Council on the basis of several factors, including the publication by the United States of data showing that Iran does not have a military nuclear program, Lavrov told a news conference. And further down it says, Lavrov, speaking after a meeting with his American counterpart, that would be Rice, said the U.S. report confirms the conclusion we have, which is that Iran does not have a nuclear weapons program. He also said Russian intelligence had no evidence that Iran had a nuclear weapons program before 2003. Russia was encouraged by Iran's cooperation with the United Nations nuclear watchdog, the International Atomic Energy Agency. Lavrov said we have similar comments out of China. Jeff Steinberg, what is it this report, if not necessarily a victory and totally embraced by Iran, has done to U.S. argument for sanctions against Iran, which, by the way, all this argument about sanctions against Iran were based on U.S. intelligence prior to this, back in 2005, that Iran is actively pursuing a nuclear weapons program. Therefore, they should be stopped. Enrichment should be stopped on that premise. It wasn't legal on any other premises. I'd like to have your take on the future of sanctions with all of this.
I, for one, believe that the U.S. is going to have a far, far more difficult time getting any sanctions, a third sanctions resolution, through the U.N. Security Council at this point. As we've known all along, both Russia and China have been opposed to continuing to expand the economic and other sanctions against Iran. And now I think that there's going to be a lot more weight behind their unwillingness to go along with a new resolution. It's always a possibility that some kind of horse trading deal will be struck, but I'm skeptical. Furthermore, I think it's very important to take careful note of what Mr. Lavrov said, because the Russians, going back to the Soviet period, had a large number of scientists and engineers working in Iran, and many of them are still there, with the exception of the IAEA. I think probably the Russians have the best on-the-ground reading and appreciation of what Iran is and is not doing with respect to their nuclear program. Now, you know, a nuclear weapons program involves three things: enrichment, weaponization, and the development of a delivery system. There's no question that Iran has an enrichment program, and it's totally legal under the Non-Proliferation Treaty and even under the augmented agreements that Iran signed and was living up to up until fairly recently. There's no question that Iran has a missile program. They're a regional power. They have a military capability. They're a country that's under threat. So there's no question that they've got missile capabilities that stretch to a fairly extensive area around the region. So really the only issue in dispute is whether or not scientists in Iran are working on being able to weaponize the uranium that is being enriched and that the UN has confirmed through IAEA is going on. My sense is that there's a lot of things about this NIE that are not being discussed, and that I think that some of the sourcing for the NIE involved cooperation with the UN inspectors, involved cooperation with the Russians to augment the satellite and other kind of communications intercepts. It's no secret that we have virtually nothing on the ground in Iran by way of live intelligence sources. The most detailed report out over this past weekend in the U.S. press, which discussed this Operation Brain Drain policy that was launched in 2005, right after that last NIE, admits that at the most they've got maybe five human sources inside Iran. And I agree with the other guest that it's very, very questionable, highly doubtful, that any of those sources are deeply involved in the Iranian nuclear program. So there's an enormous amount of guesswork, and NIE is always more art than science. And that's why I look at it more from the standpoint that this is a political veto on the part of the military and intelligence community and diplomatic corps of the United States.
All right,
against the war party faction.
All right,
in the White
Jeff,
House.
We have to leave it there for now.
Domestic political
right, we have to leave it there for now. We'll be back after just a few moments of headlines. You don't want to go away. We're back with fine print and the latest twists and turns on Iran's nuclear program, all after U.S. NIE, National Intelligence Estimates. Joining us to find and track the fine, elusive prints, we have from London, Mohan Abedin, Director of Research, the Center for the Study of Terrorism, an expert on Iranian politics. From Washington, we're joined by Jeff Steinberg, Senior Editor of Executive Intelligence Review Magazine, the EIR. From New York, by Stuart Stogel, UN correspondent for Time magazine. Let's go to Stuart Stogel. Stuart, here's an article from Mercury News, and it says Bush ambassador to UN says NIE. Bush ambassador Force Benghazi Khalilzad to UN says NIE is complicating his effort to build support for sanctions. President Bush's UN's ambassador acknowledged on Friday that an intelligence report concluding Iran stopped nuclear weapons development in 2003 has created fresh obstacles for him as the administration seeks new international sanctions against Tehran. Here's a quote from him. The initial indications that I get is that the impact is not positive, Ambassador Zamek Lizad said. Now, Stuart, the impact of this has gone as far as the Czech Republic, with headlines of the newspapers read, well, there is no need whatsoever for the missile defense shield Washington has been crying over for quite some time, the bone of contention between Russia and the U.S. So this is a really big issue. Now, on the one hand, the sanctions against Iran. On the other hand, something people would not even figure, well, how could this go as far as Czech Republic? So how do you see the future of sanctions and other, the U.S. credibility around the world and other things U.S. trying to press ahead with around the world, the U.S. agenda?
Well, there's no question that the U.S. credibility has taken a hit because of the NIE. I think also that some of the folks who are criticizing the United States now, I think some of that criticism may be tempered in the upcoming weeks. And one person who I think will start keeping a lower profile is Sergei Lavrov. I go back many years with the foreign minister when he was once the Russian ambassador to the UN. And he happens to be, or I should say Russia, is one of the major reasons why we have this nuclear crisis with Iran. According to a senior Iranian government official, he told me that when Bushehr, the commercial nuclear power station, which is being built by Russia for Iran, when it was being built, there was an agreement between Russia and Iran where the entire fuel cycle would take place in the old Soviet Union, or I should say, or Russia. And the issue of uranium enrichment by Iran was never an issue because the Russians were supposed to address that themselves. When it came time to finalize that contract, according to what I was told by an Iranian official, the Russians attempted to price gouge Iran on the reprocessing, or enrichment, I should say, of the uranium fuel. Their asking price was so outrageous, there was then a decision by the Iranian government to do all the fuel cycle within Iran, which fast forwards us to the current cycle right now. This would not have come about had the Russians not tried to price gouge the Iranian government, and basically Tehran refused to be intimidated by the Russians. I think more details regarding the Russian role may be leaked by the Americans if Russia continues to, so we say, obstruct future sanctions in the Security Council. So I do think sanctions are still a possibility, but they'll be watered down, and I think in the end the Russians will, shall we say, keep quiet. They'll start to moot their opposition, simply because if the Russians were a true friend of Iran, the power station at Bushehr would have come online more than 2 years ago. Right now, it's still laying idle. It's waiting for the final fuel cycle to be completed to come online. But when it does, it will be anywhere between 2.5 to 3 years late and overpriced, all of which was done specifically by Moscow.
That's a very important issue when it comes to sanctions, China and Russia. One day before this NIE, we had the 5+6. We had this coming out on a Monday, the Sunday before which we had the 5+1 meeting in Europe. And then we had the Russian ambassador to the talks somehow stuck in snow, and somebody replaced him at the talks. And that's why the 5+1 said we couldn't reach any decision on sanctions. One day after that, we have the White House announcing, Stephen Hatley hitting the podiums and announcing that, well, this and that. Oh, Iran halted its nuclear weapons program back in 2003. But the day before that, we had articles that China was on board, apparently news from Americans that, well, I'm on board for sanctions against Iran. Jeff Steinberg, China and Russia opposition. Because today we're not talking treaties. We're talking resolutions out of the UN Security Council. We're talking NIEs out of U.S. intelligence communities. NPT, according to many analysts, we're just hearing the death rattle of NPT. So when it comes to the equations of a new world that we're facing, this new world order set by Washington, now, what are your predictions, speculations on the future of all of this and what we just heard from Stuart Stogel?
Well, I think for one thing that it's very hard to make a really precise prediction at this point as to where it's going to go. I think everybody is kind of regrouping and scrambling. And of course, the Europeans, the Chinese, and the Russians are undoubtedly pretty angry at the fact that it's now known that President Bush received at least a kind of a framework briefing on the findings that Iran had halted the program in 2003. As early as August of this year, and there was a tumultuous meeting of the top figures in the administration late October, early November, attended by the vice president, where there was apparently a rather heated debate over the findings. So top administration officials were going around making very inflammatory comments, squeezing the other players in the whole sanctions regime, knowing all along that this NIE had made some findings that would cut the legs out from under some of their key arguments for sanctions. So I think that a lot of people are justifiably angry that the U.S. continued to sort of, you know, try to sell a certain hard line on sanctions after they knew what this NIE had already found. So the level of predictability here between what happened at that meeting just prior to the release of the NIE and where things stand right now is a pretty dramatic gulf. Now, I think there's another question I just want to put on the table, and maybe you want to take this up further. But, you know, The United States has had a policy of isolation and containment of Iran that goes back long before the Bush administration. It's noteworthy that back in 1992, Iran was not invited to the Madrid conference, which was supposed to be a comprehensive attempt at regional peace coming off of Operation Desert Storm. So the question now is whether or not this NIE and events surrounding it is going to force a larger policy change where you actually shift from a doctrine of isolation and containment to a doctrine of diplomatic engagement and inclusion in a larger policy structure for security in that part of the world. It seems even the GCC is interested in pursuing this more fundamental shift in policy with the invitation of President Ahmadinejad to attend the GCC meeting a few days ago and the very prominent photograph in BBC and Reuters of King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia and President Ahmadinejad holding hands at the meeting. So I think that there's many, many questions and many unpredictables now in the situation, in part as the result of this NIE.
Now, something very probably, let's say, surprising that just happened over the past few days on Saturday in a regional meeting and a Gulf meeting in Bahrain and Manama, we had U.S. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates, considered a, let's say, dove by many in Washington. He had really harsh words for Iran. Now, here are a few headlines of some paper, and I'd like you to listen to this. This is JTA, Jewish Telegraphic Agency. Gates defends Israeli nukes. And then we have from Reuters, Israel, no nuclear threat to neighbors, says Gates. And on we have Gates takes a hard line on Iran from Los Angeles Times. Gates urges Gulf nations confront Iran, Associated Press. ABC News, Gates calls for anti-Iran missile shield. Iran threatens Mideast, U.S. says. U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates has warned that Iran still poses a serious threat to the Middle East and the U.S. BBC. Guardian Unlimited, Iran remains potential threat, Gates warns. Gates says, Associated Press, Iran seeks to cause chaos. Bloomberg, Gates urges intensified diplomatic economic pressure on Iran. VOA, U.S. defense chief, still considers Iran a threat despite a new intelligence estimate. And Iran may have restarted nuclear program, ABC, and an echo of what Ehud Barak, Israeli defense minister, had to say. And Gates defends Israeli nukes on and on and on. Now, Mahan Abedin, pretty harsh words out there in Bahrain, and of course a backlash of which we would go through in just a few moments. Mahan?
Huh? Yeah, I didn't catch your question. Could you repeat it, please?
Yes, well, I just read out to you titles emerging from U.S. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates, really harsh words for Iran, all the allegations against Iran, all wrapped up in just one speech from the supporting militias in Iraq to Iran's nuclear program to Hezbollah to Hamas, so on and so forth, all repeated by Gates in front of the Arab Council of Regional Cooperation in Bahrain, a regional meeting, so to speak. Now, yeah. I'd like to have your take here, especially after the calm of what many call there are new windows of opportunities for the two countries to get back together because there's a period of calm and not those accusations repeated from Washington. Now, what do you read into this really, really harsh stance, which is quite surprising to many?
No, well, it's not surprising at all for anybody who has been following Iranian-American relations for the past 28 years, especially over the past 6 years. These developments are not at all surprising. And just because you've had a national intelligence estimate report that is somewhat favorable to Iran in some respects, this does not indicate in any sense that the American pressure in Iran is going to decrease in the foreseeable future. If anything, it will probably increase. And let's just get a grip on the situation. The nuclear issue is one area of dispute. There are others. Arguably, some of them are more important than the nuclear issue. For instance, the Israeli-Palestinian peace process is arguably the biggest stumbling block in Iranian-American relations. And of course, the United States has just embarked on this Annapolis peace conference that's ostensibly designed to solve the main sticking points in that conflict before Bush leaves office in January 2009. Of course, Iran is opposed to this initiative, as it has been opposed to every single Middle Eastern so-called peace initiative since Madrid in October 1991. And then there's the situation in Iraq, where the United States for the past 4 years has been coming up with the contradictory statements on the Iranian involvement there, in some cases accusing Iran of direct involvement in targeting American and other coalition forces. In other instances, more sober and more realistic American military commanders actually praising, albeit half-heartedly and in a very coded manner, Iran's involvement in Iraq, Iran's helpful involvement in that country. And of course, there's the wider tensions in the Persian Gulf area. And the very fact that Mr. Ahmadinejad turned up at this meeting of the Gulf Cooperation Council meeting, this was certainly not to the liking of the United States, which likes to see division and real tension between the Arab states of the Persian Gulf and Iran. And the fact that differences are being bridged, albeit very modestly and in some areas, this is certainly not to the liking of the United States. And more broadly, I think I agree with the comments of one of your guests that this NIE report will in no way mean any kind of movement on the sanctions front. The United States and its allies will forge ahead and will try to impose tougher sanctions on Iran. They will try to push them through either this month or the month after, because the question, as far as they're concerned, is uranium enrichment. So I don't think on the ground and in terms of the broader parameters of Iranian-American relations, this NIE report is all that important. What it does, and this is significant, all it does really is that it really does mean that the threat of military action, which is very, very small to begin with. Those who follow these events closely and are well connected in the region and in Iran itself would have known that these threats were never really taken seriously by the Iranians. But what this report does, it makes a military attack, a military confrontation, all but impossible in the next 12 months anyway, in the foreseeable future.
Right. Let's take a look at the broader picture and, of course, the Gulf reaction to Gates' words. Gulf challenges U.S. on Iran, Israel. Gulf Arab countries, this by Associated Press, Gulf Arab countries challenged Defense Secretary Robert Gates on American policies toward Iran and Israel on Saturday after he urged them to force Tehran to stop uranium enrichment. Several delegates at the Regional Security Conference in Bahrain said U.S. was hypocritical for supporting Israeli nuclear weapons and questioned Washington's refusal to meet with Iran to discuss the Islamic State's nuclear activities, not considering Israel, and here's a quote, a threat to security in the region is considered a biased policy that is based on a double standard, said Abdulrahman Al-Attiyah, Secretary General of the Six Nation Gulf Cooperation Council. Experts have long maintained Israel has nuclear weapons, although the Jewish state refuses to confirm or deny. The dissent from Gulf Arab delegates highlights fissures between the United States and the Sunni Muslim allies, despite their wariness of Shiite Iran's growing influence. So, Stuart Stogel, don't you see this Bush Gates speech, another faux pas on the part of Washington? Now, speaking of sanctions and this NIE, it's just it's having a domino effect, so to speak. We already have rife anti-American sentiments in the region, in the Arab world, and the U.S. trying so hard to marshal Sunni Arab support against Iran, simply saying, demonizing Iran, saying, well, we have this huge country, it's building up its military, building up its nuclear facilities, and it's a real threat to the region. While we have the people here and the GCC, PGCC, Persian Gulf Cooperation Council members, simply a huge backlash coming to the U.S. and, of course, on Gates' defense of Israel, and especially on its nuclear program, this drew a huge laughter from the audience there. And then we had Larijani here, Dr. Larijani, saying, when we talk to these people, they're telling us we're all afraid of the United States, not you. So how do you see all of this building up against the U.S., and, of course, with a view to sanctions?
Well, I mean, We can look at what the Arabs are saying publicly and what they're doing privately. I mean, the fact of the matter is the U.S. military buildup in the Gulf would not have happened without the acquiescence of the GCC and most of the Arab states there. So they can say one thing publicly and they'll do one thing privately. I think more importantly is the meeting scheduled next week between Iran and the United States in Baghdad, the working group, which will try and hammer out the agenda for a formal security conference in Iraq in January. The Iraqis have told me that privately the Iranians have been very helpful in calming the violence down in Iraq and adding to the success of the American surge. That has not been lost on the Pentagon. My understanding is if progress is made during next week's talks and the formal meeting next month in January, that might actually cause a bigger shift, a substantive shift in American policy than what the NIE said last week. So I think the month of January, when we have new Security Council members coming in, five new members, and the Iranian-U.S. meeting will be far more critical on how we proceed in the future regarding U.S. relations with Iran and also the Iranian nuclear program.
Jeff Steinberg, there's a lot of brouhaha right now where in Israel. Now, let's take a look at a few headlines. Time magazine, for example, Iran assessment creates an Israeli headache. It goes, well, we have Asia Times reading Israel's autopilot policy on Iran, of course, referring to threats coming out of Tel Aviv. Guardian Unlimited, unilateral military strike, still an option, senior ministers insist, of course, senior Israeli ministers. Now we have Ynet's news and Israeli source saying U.S. Armed Forces chief in Tel Aviv for talks on Iran threat that refers to Admiral Mullen, the U.S. joint head of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff. And then we have the Jerusalem Post, an article titled PM, that is Olmert, Israel to expose Iran's nuclear arms program. Olmert, no change over Iran nukes, Associated Press. Haaretz, PM, we will expose Iran's secret work. Xinhua, Olmert, stance on Iranian nuclear project unchanged. Iran continuing nuclear arms development, Israel's, Olmert says, Bloomberg. It goes on and on and on. Now, Stuart, we have a U.S. Major Chief of Staff in Israel as we speak right now, Admiral Mullen. And a lot of discussions going on. Of course, Israelis not taking very kindly to this report and reports of a possible strike this time around from Israel with the against the backdrop of this NIE, which has crippled U.S. military in every sense for a strike, at least in front of the world public opinion.
Well, I think the Israelis are not, despite what they may say about their independence, the Israelis are not going to strike Iran without American acquiescence. And I really do not think that George Bush really has a strike on Iran anytime in the foreseeable future. The only wild card could be if they find conclusive evidence that Iran was helping the Syrians build a nuclear weapon, but I don't think they're going to find that.
Let's have Jeff's response to that. Israel and all of this. Jeff?
Well, I think the Israelis, first of all, have a different standard than we do. The NIE talked about the Iranians halting work on the weaponization part of their nuclear program. The Israeli view is that the red line for them is the point at which Iran has all of the capabilities in-house to potentially produce a nuclear weapon. And so they've got a much lower bar than the United States does. I agree completely with Stuart. The Israelis, I don't believe, have the ability to do serious damage to the Iranian nuclear program, even if they wanted to, unless they were prepared to use nuclear weapons. And I don't see that in the cards. So Israel is in a more difficult situation as the result of the NIE, and they're doing everything that they possibly can to walk the United States back from those findings, and I just don't see it happening. Admiral Mullen is in Israel to receive the Israeli intelligence briefing, and the admiral, as far as I understand it, along with Secretary of Defense Gates and the CENTCOM Commander Admiral Fallon, are all opposed to U.S. or Israeli or joint U.S.-Israeli military strikes against Iran. They just consider this a disaster. And I think that the main intention of this military intelligence faction in the United States has been to foreclose the military option and to run out the clock on this administration. I don't think they have any more grandiose expectations than that. I think that Secretary Gates was speaking about matters that are not on his policy portfolio. He's not the Secretary of State. He's not dealing with the diplomacy and the sanctions issues. And I think he was reading an administration policy line speech at that IISS meeting in Bahrain. And I don't put an enormous amount of stock in the back and forth discussion that took place there, other than that there's a certain sign that the Persian Gulf Arab states are taking a bit more of an independent stance from the United States, and they're more willing to challenge the U.S. on this Israeli issue. They don't want to be accused of having gone to Annapolis to put together a Sunni Arab Israeli war alliance against Iran. And they've gone out of their way since they showed up at Annapolis to make it clear that their policy is not to encourage confrontation with Iran. They don't want the region to blow up.
All right.
And the Israeli issue is a very sensitive issue, obviously, for all those Arab states,
now we have
especially
to
after Annapolis.
All right, we have to leave it here. But now we have this article, AFP, Agence France-Presse, UN nuclear team in Iran for new talks. State media delegation from UN nuclear watchdog arrived in Tehran on Sunday to tackle a new subject in ongoing talks over the controversial Iranian nuclear program, the Iranian news agency reported. We will cover this issue coming Wednesday after we have news articles out of that on fine print. Our thanks to all of our guests for the time and views. We're joined from London by Mohan Abedin, Director of Research Center for the Study of Terrorism, expert on Iranian politics. From Washington, we were joined by Jeff Steinberg, Senior Editor of Executive Intelligence Review Magazine. From New York, by Stuart Stogel, UN correspondent for Time Magazine. Gentlemen, thank you for the insight you brought to this show. And, of course, our thanks to our viewers for joining us. Always watch out for the fine print with me, Amir Arfa.